Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Cop Shop with FPD. I'm your host, Chief Steve Heavy. It's been many a moon, it feels like, since I've actually been sitting here. I forgot where the radio station was. It took me a little bit. And speaking of somebody who's forgot where the radio station is, with me as usual is Shanice. How are you, Shanice?
I'm good. I had a great vacation, time off. It was...
Yeah, 2 months is really something.
Those Fridays, yeah. Really, I've enjoyed it, but I'm glad to be back. I missed you guys.
Almost forgot we had a PIO at the department. Things come up from time to time. But anyway, it's good to see you. And we have a special guest right now with us, and it is currently detective, but on the short list for sergeant, Chris Boya. So welcome, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
And you wanted to start off kind of telling us about yourself and your upbringing and your interests in school, and or did we bring you in to talk about something else?
I'm here to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. Well, we'll probably spare him an in-depth expose. We can bring him back for that. But Chris is one of our detectives that's been working on a variety of important cases. We've had a busy month or so on some violent cases. But Chris is going to talk with us about something that he kind of specializes in for the department, and that's sextortion. And Shanice, you had a chance to have Chris with KOB, and I understand that interview was just aired here in the last day or so, kind of shed some light on a topic you didn't know that much about either that
no,
was going on.
No, it was super informative, especially as a parent. Like, I wasn't expecting a lot of his answers. I was expecting that interview to go more... about like just things to look for and ways that you can stay proactive. And he shed a light on like government entities and how it's being tracked. And like me and the reporter were super impressed, just all the knowledge that we didn't know. So I thought it'd be great to kind of share that with the public.
No, I think that too. And you know, there's so many threats to our kids. You know, we obviously talk with the police about school shootings, and school violence is a big one, but there's all kinds of other things, and this is one through social media that really does, well, our kids are vulnerable too. And so, Chris, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, sextortion, how it typically unfolds, and kind of what your role has been in it here in Farmington.
Okay. So, I mean, just the word itself, let's break down the word sextortion. So there's a sexual element to an extortion case, right? So that's where the term sextortion comes from. Extortion itself is nothing new, right? People have been scamming since, you know, back from, you get an email from a prince overseas who's inherited all this money, and, you know, he wants to give you some money if you only do something in return. And we don't tend to fall for those scams anymore, right? Because we're wise to them. As we become wise to these scams, they start to taper off, right? Because if they're not successful, the people trying to extort people for money are gonna switch to different tactics, right? So this extortion is, you know, extorting people through basically sending sensitive images of themselves, this can be adults, and this can be juveniles. I've seen kids contacted in elementary age who have, you know, fallen victim to these types of cases. And so sextortion, in the definition of it, is basically somebody trying to extort somebody else, and usually through the internet, by means of the sensitive images, if that makes sense.
And so as they get into the sensitive images, then what they're playing off of is the embarrassment or humiliation of the victim and holding that against them in order to extract something from them.
Right. And so the short of it is they pose, whether it's to an adult, and the reason we talk about children so much is because, one, they're the most vulnerable, and then two, they're the most likely to respond to these individuals and become victims. Adults seem, and I've had adult victim cases, but adults seem to be a little bit more able to vet people and say, okay, I've seen this song and dance before. I know this isn't a real person. You know, some supermodel is hitting me up on social media and is interested in me. And they're a little bit more skeptical of that. Whereas as teenagers, young male adults, yep, especially are seeking out, you know, that attention, and when they get that attention, you know, they follow it because they want to believe that this is a real person. And so that want to believe becomes belief, and then they think that they may be in some sort of relationship with this person, and then they start to share sensitive images and videos with this individual. And once that happens, the person on the other end, who is usually overseas, says one of two things. Either they use those images or videos and say, you know, I need you to go get something that's hard to track, Apple gift cards, Google gift cards, whatever the case may be. And I need you to scratch off the number, $50, give me the number, or I'm going to tell all your family about this, share these images and videos with them as punishment for not complying with my demands. And, you know, that lead, or the other alternative is, I need you to send me now, if they've only sent a picture, I need you to send me a video. And then that becomes even more compromising, so they have more leverage over the victim. So that's usually how these cases begin. And, you know, I've had cases here, and this isn't local to Farmington. This is all over the country. But I've had cases here locally where, you know, kids have actually gone out without their parents' knowledge, gone out, gotten these gift cards, purchased them, scratched off the numbers, sent the numbers to these extorters where the parents are none the wiser. No idea this is going on. And so I think that's the bridge we're trying to gap, is to make sure that everybody understands that this is an issue, and to keep, you know, to keep an eye on what's going on.
So that, I mean, like you said, it's nationwide, and it is not really all that new. It's been several years already. That Manti Te'o case, who was a professional football player for the San Diego Chargers, but it started when he was in college, and he gets hit up by a person like you're describing. There actually is a person back behind the scenes, but it's not who they're claiming to be, and he believes that he's in a romantic relationship, and it's all just a catfishing, and it winds up breaking on national television. So there's a professional player with all the embarrassment that comes from that kind of attention that, you know, I don't think he saw coming. So, you know, but it is even down here into Farmington. So, Shanice, you had a chance to listen to some of the interview. What kind of things, what kind of questions did you come away with?
So when you started answering those questions about how it's happening, she was asking you how we're getting those reports. Like, are these kids finally reporting it to the police department? Are the families reporting it to the police department? And then you really opened up a whole Pandora's box on how it all happens, and I'd love for you to share that.
So rarely is the case, and I can't count even one, where the child themselves has come forward. That just doesn't happen because they're embarrassed. I think, let me recant that. I think of one instance where a child in Farmington came forward to his mom, and I think he was already of legal age, but nonetheless still a victim of the case, and he was just so afraid. He had dug himself such a big hole, he didn't know how to get out of it, and was contemplating hurting himself. So he did the right thing, and he came to his family for help, you know, rather than going a different route with that. But the vast majority of these cases, and a lot of people don't realize this, and I give them, year in and year out, I go to these Internet Crimes Against Children conferences in Atlanta, and these major platforms are there, TikTok. We know, you know, Facebook and Instagram are run by the same company, but Snapchat, all these other, you know, different social media platforms are very, very interested in stopping child exploitation. They don't want it on their platform. Major companies like Apple and Google, the same thing. They don't want children to be extorted through their platform. So they're very good at injecting artificial intelligence and actual boots on the ground, people that verify, actual people that verify, you know, that this is going on. So what may trigger it is a, and this happens to, on other things too, like Xbox Live, so actual audible chat and different things like that. An artificial intelligence picks up a string of words together and says, this is suspicious. This sounds like a child is being exploited or it's extorted. So it then sends that chat log to an actual boots-on-the-ground investigator at the platform who reads through the chat log and said, absolutely, this is what's happening, who then turns the case over to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or short-term known as NCMEC, and then an investigator from there assigns it to, so for us, it'd be the New Mexico Department of Justice, gets sent the tip, and they span it out to local investigators, which is what I do. And so then from there, we begin to investigate the case. So it usually comes through the back door almost every time, which is good that it's happening that way. Otherwise, it wouldn't come at all.
So that's, you know, on the national dialogue, how we view Facebook, you know, TikTok, Instagram, those are all, depending on where you fall politically on all of this, you know, they're oftentimes viewed as almost nothing but evil and exploitative and apathetic to things like that. But you're saying the overwhelming majority of your cases come as a result of those agencies actually alerting authorities about it.
Yes, so absolutely. And everything from not just the chat logs, but they're running, and you can imagine how much data Google stores. And Google is running every single image that's on their platform to see if it's known child sex abuse material every day. And if they get a hit on some of that stuff, they immediately send that to investigator. And that may be stored within a chat log of sextortion. And so then that may be how a sextortion case breaks too.
Okay.
But this is happening behind the scenes every day. And, you know, hundreds of cases are being made every day just on that end.
On a weekly basis, how many times do you think that you're making these contacts through these investigations, or like a monthly basis?
So I don't have the exact numbers, but I mean, I would say on a weekly basis, you know, we're working these cases. You know, I have probably a handful that are pending now that investigators are working on. And sometimes these kind of cross-pollinate into different jurisdictions, so we have to, you know, work together with getting them the case if it's happening outside of our jurisdiction. Maybe it's in Aztec, Bloomfield, or the county. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we sometimes fan out these to them. Now, I will say Homeland Security, this is one of their top priorities right now. And so I get contacted probably on a monthly basis by Homeland Security saying, you know, we've seen that there's a sextortion case in your area. Will you please go make first contact with family? And they end up taking the entire case. And the reason for that is because we've been chasing ghosts for years. And I call these cases chasing ghosts because they're covering up their tracks, just like a fox in the woods with, you know, a stick covering up the snow, because they use burner accounts. So they make a fake account pretending to be this individual. They use some kind of IP masking program. So a lot of my local lead investigative efforts go to dead ends. Or they go to somebody overseas, right? And am I realistically in Farmington, New Mexico, charging the last one I had popped in Nigeria? Am I trying to extradite a guy from Nigeria to Farmington, New Mexico? Probably not. But is Homeland Security doing that? Absolutely. Because not only talking to the kids is important, but these people being held accountable is important. That's how, you know, it, when they realize that there's repercussions for what they're doing and that they are getting extradited back to the United States to be held accountable, then we start to see these numbers fall.
Are there any specific demographics or groups of people who are more vulnerable to sextortion? And if so, why?
So the most vulnerable group is going to be the one that they have the most success with, right? So I talked about adults. Adults are being targeted, but they don't have the majority of success. Statistically, and this is true in Europe and it's true in North America, is young adult males, probably between the age of 12 and 24. And that's just what the numbers show, because the scammers, the extorters, are the most successful with this age group. And
so they've had some horrific ones across the country that have wound up in the news quite a bit. So the topic isn't brand new to, you know, I think our listening audience, but some of those have ended awful tragically and awful quickly with the victim. You know, like you had kind of alluded to, the victim winds up committing suicide. What can you talk about any of those national trends that you're in on?
And so I hear these case studies at these conferences. We saw the one break in California last year where it's fast. It happens fast. And so, you know, the idea of trying to notice change in your child or whatever the case may not work in this case, because this some of the cases I've seen that the child's getting targeted at 9 p.m. and by a little after midnight he's committed suicide. So that's how fast these things can turn sideways. So I think the best thing we can do as parents or as keepers of vulnerable population is to have those courageous conversations, even though they're uncomfortable, and say, hey, listen, this is, you know, I have to have this conversation with my own kids. Like, hey, this, just know that this is what's happening. One of my own kids was actually contacted by one of these people, and they recognized, you know, what was going on, and they kind of said, hey, you know, I'm talking to this person, and what do you think? And I'm like, this is absolutely not a real person. But the rose-colored glasses, they wanted to believe it was a real person.
Sure.
And I said, you know, they're absolutely trying to. Luckily, not, you know, the intervention was done prior to any damage, but it was that conversation that prompted them to come to me, right? So, and I think that is important for all of us to take away.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we're doing, FPD is doing, with the schools to educate or partner on educating those kids?
Yes. So, and I believe Deputy Chief Dowdy had the school resource officers, along with some other individuals, you know, put on some presentations. I send out the sextortion flyer every year, just to make sure. Every year that school starts, I send it out, you know, to the schools to make sure they're aware of what's going on. And it's one thing to pass out a flyer, but to have us go out to the schools and explain this kind of stuff, I think is definitely what we're doing that's going to help. Certainly every time I talk about this issue, just like when we talked in the interview the other day, everybody's like, wow, I didn't realize the depth of this. You know, we hear it in passing, so we kind of understand the tip of the iceberg, but there's a lot that goes on in the background in these cases that's not talked about. I'm telling you, the kids aren't talking about it to their parents. They're not coming forward. So it's up to us to reach out to them.
So just like you were talking about with the other scams, that eventually people get wise to it, and then that success drops off, and they move on to a different tactic. That comes about because of knowledge. You know, people get wise to it because they're getting more knowledgeable on it. So that was one reason Shanice wanted to bring you on to the show and you know, kind of talk about a topic that maybe we haven't highlighted enough here, and that then will help parents, you know, to have those conversations with the kids, help the kids to talk more about it among themselves and become a little more aware. So it's not like it's mission impossible, because we've seen other scams and eventually they lose because people get wise to it. That's what we're hoping will happen here. And the use of AI technology, you know, you're talking about it as a good thing. And it can be, but it can also be a bad thing, and it can help to create that fake image of a person that makes it more believable, more credible when they're reaching out looking for victims. So AI, you know, like almost everything, I think holds a lot of good, but holds a lot of potential
Absolutely.
Bad.
That's very true. Okay, and the last question I have is, what legal consequences do individuals face if they are caught engaging in sextortion, and how does the legal system handle these cases?
So probably the heaviest charge, and especially here locally, but federally as well, because there's some mandatory minimums, but it always involves the exploitation of children, right? So it always will involve distribution of child sex abuse material. It'll always involve asking the child to produce child sex abuse material, which are very, very heavy hitting crimes in the United States. And actually, when you go to these Internet Crimes Against Children conferences, there's people from all over the world there. And it's these crimes against one of our most vulnerable populations are taken very seriously. And that's why there's so many, I think there's at least, and I don't want to misquote numbers, but there's at least 114 HSI agents from the last number I heard that almost solely work these exploitation type cases, and trying to hold these people and make cases against people that think that they're safe just because there's an ocean between their victim and themselves. So there are some major repercussions, you know, that include decades of jail time for committing these crimes.
Now, HSI's involvement is also kind of goes to what we're talking about with, you know, with Facebook and TikTok. We wind up seeing them, in simplistic terms, HSI generally around the topic of immigration. And then there's the controversies, and you watch Mayorkas going up on Capitol Hill, and he takes a beating, and I've never once seen a clip, and I like the clips where I'm watching the testimony. You wind up hearing it from the man himself, but I've never seen a clip where he's going in depth talking about sextortion as a role of HSI. And so to the American public, then, HSI is so tied, whatever your views are on immigration and what's going on the border, they're tied to that, and they're not tied to all these efforts that are also going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It doesn't get enough airtime. I mean, I guess I won't get into all of it, but the media picks what they think's important. And, you know, I think this is an important topic, and I'm glad we're talking about it. So.
Well, I'm glad to hear that HSI reaches out to you, and so potentially they can help take over a case from you, and they can bring it to resolution.
Yes, and some of the ideas in this. So, like, I had a case here locally where I had one offender, and I had one offender in at least 5 different states in 18 different jurisdictions, right? So for, again, you know, a detective in Farmington, New Mexico, our interest is in what? The victims here in San Juan County. Not that we're not interested in the other ones, we just can't really, our span of control doesn't reach out to Los Angeles, yep. It doesn't reach out to Mexico, and it doesn't reach out to Phoenix, right? Those are some of the real places that these victims were at in my case. So it takes a federal agent that has that span of control to be able to reach out and take the entire case and hold the individual accountable, not only for what happened in Farmington, but also what's happened in Mexico and California and Arizona and the other jurisdictions that are affected by what happened.
Well, very good. Well, Chris, it's an important topic. And, you know, I know that you've been on this for several years, you know, that this is kind of your focus with our agency. To a greater or lesser degree, depending on the other things that we have going. But I appreciate you coming in and talking about it. It is a case that, in the end, first of all, it's just completely innocent people being victimized, and then secondly, it often ends tragically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you coming in and spending a little time and helping folks to know what's going on and what the threat is to their kids, and the threats in our schools. You know, hopefully, it makes a difference. And I appreciate your efforts and all you're doing on it. So. Shanice, you wanted to talk about football this week, but I don't think Scott and I do, so thanks for rubbing
all
it
things
in.
All things I know.
Yeah. I between Buffalo and Green Bay, it was not a good weekend for us, but Shanice is celebrating, and that's, you know, that's just, Now it's mean-spirited. But anyway, you know, that's who she is today. So we'll probably sign off on that. We'll give you an update next time on the legislature and what's going on in Santa Fe. There's quite a bit, and it'll be going on for another few weeks. So we'll update you then. Until next time, we'll see you here at the Cop Shop with FPD.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.